The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Imagine this. Imagine 3 feet of storm surge right here. Now, if this amount of water catches you by surprise, it's too late to evacuate. Cars are floating around and floating away. There's large objects in here that could knock things down with a battering ram-like force. Now, there's no way, again, to evacuate with this kind of storm surge. But we know there's going to be places with more than 3 feet. Imagine 6 feet of storm surge. Now, this completely floods out the first floors of homes and businesses. And the only way to escape that is to move to the higher floor of a building. Now, unfortunately, there are going to be places that get more than 6 feet of storm surge flooding. Imagine this, 9 feet and even beyond of flooding, of inundation. This is practically not survivable.
It's been 2 weeks, and there has been an outpouring of frustration that has played out on social media. In some cases, people saying that FEMA hasn't been there, that they haven't been there to support them. In other cases, saying that they've actually, federal authorities have actually turned away local volunteers who are trying to help. What do you say to all of that pushback out there?
Yeah, it's unfortunate that we're still having this conversation. It's a false narrative, and it's just a distraction to what we're doing here on the ground. Just because you don't see somebody in a FEMA shirt walking around a community doesn't mean FEMA's not there.
J.D. Vance just came out with an opinion piece accusing the Biden administration of mismanaging the response, calling the response so far incompetent, and calling you out specifically. Here it is in part. He writes this: shortly after Helene made landfall in the United States on September 26, Joe Biden was at his house in Rehoboth Beach. Vice President Kamala Harris was flying between ritzy California fundraisers, hobnobbing with celebrities. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas was in Los Angeles presiding over an award ceremony. How do you respond to those accusations from J.D. Vance?
Kate, we don't listen to or pay attention to such unproductive and, quite frankly, counterproductive words. We're focused on mission.
Do you think this is a time to put falsehoods aside, like the idea that FEMA funds are being redirected to migrants, which is just not true?
Well, it is true that FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security have been spending billions of dollars on migrants. Now, I understand some people say they're separate funds, but we just passed a short-term spending bill. It's very common for the administration to come and ask for permission to move money between funds, especially to prepare for emergencies. And second, I would note that this administration seems to have no problem finding money when they want to spend it on their priorities.
And this is important because there has been fear that this misinformation would be detrimental to those who are affected. And you're saying you are seeing evidence that that these rumors are setting in and people are not seeking the aid that is available to them because of these false rumors?
That is indeed the case, Kate. And I will tell you another negative impact of this deliberately false information. It is demoralizing to the men and women at the federal level, at the state and local level, who are actually risking their lives to save others and to bring much needed relief to those who need it.
Wow. Federal officials are demoralized because of misinformation regarding Hurricane Helene. As you saw there in the first bit of the cold open, Hurricane Milton, it's barreling down on Central Florida, should hit tonight, direct hit to Tampa. And FEMA's getting all of this criticism for how they've botched the relief effort in North Carolina, in Tennessee, in Georgia. It's, as I've said this week, you see the curses being overtaken by curses. And one of the curses is leadership or lack thereof, just as Isaiah 3 prophesies. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. You can get to the live video stream of this program at TrumpetDaily.com or at the Rumble channel. Just go to Rumble.com/TrumpetDaily. And if you go, give us the thumbs up and leave a nice comment. You can also email the show, TD@TheTrumpet.com. So it's interesting. And I try to do it when I'm exercising so I can at least have some productive minutes. But just watching the first 10 minutes of Morning Meltdown, I mean, every single, I think I heard J6 three times in passing, because, you know, they're there and they've got to expose the misinformation. I'll get to all of the articles, the firsthand accounts of people saying, we're on our own out here. We're up in the mountain. We continue to see dead bodies floating by. Where's the tracker, by the way, of how many people are dying or have died already from Helene? And now we've got another one. And in listening to the administration, you would think that they're just doing everything perfectly. It's a perfect recovery effort. Mayorkas himself said they were out of money. KJP herself said FEMA funds were being redirected to migrants. She said it 2 years ago. Mayorkas as well. We've played the clips. We have the receipts. People aren't making this up. As I've been saying all week, where are the reporters on the scene? There's a few. Their testimonials are getting out. One's even in The Guardian today. But no reporters. I'm old enough to remember the outpouring of rebuke and criticism aimed at President Bush back in 2005 following the Hurricane Katrina. That was back when you're supposed to criticize your government. Today, how sensitive. Morning Mika is so sensitive. How did the Wall Street Journal allow J.D. Vance to print his op-ed? Biden, Harris mismanaged hurricane relief. They did. They did. And it comes at a horrible time for them politically. You've got Kamala. She's trying to act like she's presidential. She's on the phone or wanting to be with Governor DeSantis. And then hilariously, the fake president yesterday, he comes out with a news conference at the same time Kamala's speaking again, undermining her, saying that, yeah, I've been working with DeSantis and it's gone great. Another Category 5 hurricane. It's probably going to be a Category 3 or 4 by the time it makes landfall. But still, a 15-foot storm surge. This is going to be devastating. This is one of the largest evacuations in history. Central Florida, on the western side, it's empty. Bracing themselves for the worst. So as I'm exercising, watching the first 10 minutes of Morning Joe, you've got J6, you've got all this information. They're so offended by it. They're so offended by the Wall Street Journal piece. How could they allow misinformation? How could they allow J.D. Vance to lie? You can't, as you heard earlier this week, if you even ask the wrong question, they'll accuse you of misinformation. Together with all that, J6, stolen election, now the hurricane relief. Together with all that, they've got the bombshell October surprise. Bob Woodward. He's got another book coming out, and guess what? He describes the intimate relationship between Donald Trump and, you guessed it, Vladimir Putin. That's right, the Russia hoax. It's back. How many times has it been back? Over and again, listen to Lawrence O'Donnell from his show last night, clip 14.
Today's October surprise, revealed this morning by the Washington Post, would have crushed any presidential candidate prior to the Trump era and Donald Trump. The Washington Post reported this morning that Bob Woodward's new book, which will be published next week, titled War, reveals that in the darkest hour of the COVID-19 pandemic in 2020, when there was no vaccine and when most people in the world, including most people in this country, could not obtain COVID tests, Donald Trump sent priceless COVID tests to Vladimir Putin for Vladimir Putin's personal use. The Washington Post's breaking news headline on this story this morning was Trump secretly sent COVID tests to Putin during 2020 shortage, new book says.
Wow. When I first heard this, my jaw just hit the floor. He sent COVID tests to Putin 4 years ago? That's the big reveal? That's the October surprise? This is what should have destroyed the Trump campaign? This? The world is burning. Lawrence, the world is burning. Just in case you want to cover any of the main news. An October surprise. They recirculate Jack Smith. All right, we've got to give that new life. I mean, that's a bombshell. When was that? Like 7, 8, 10 days ago? That's a bombshell. And then here's another one. A COVID test that went to Putin. Meanwhile, two massive hurricanes, and don't you dare criticize the relief effort. These people, shameless. Shameless. They just carry on. J6, again, really? It's not like I check in every single morning. Every single time I do, though, it's mentioned. It's mentioned multiple times often. The president was fired upon. An assassin took a shot in the first case. And then another one tried to kill him 9 weeks later. That's all happened this past summer. This is from The Guardian. At least 227 people have died, and the toll is only going to get higher. The rivers are giving up the dead. Landslides are yielding corpses. The destruction is grotesque, in some cases total, with bridges condemned, roadways eviscerated, and whole towns obliterated. The personal terror I felt that morning is nothing compared to the rage I feel on behalf of those lives unnecessarily lost, those displaced, those struggling to access too few services, and at a governmental response that has seemingly prioritized the most privileged. Here's another eyewitness account. Here, it's like Tom Cotton said. I mean, we can quibble over the buckets of money that the federal government has, and if there's something separate for disasters and something separate for the migrants. But it's a matter of priorities. The billions and the tens of thousands in cash, in room and board, all of that for the migrants. Coming in by the millions. And then here, what do you get? Well, you get promised $750. As long as you have photo ID. As long as you can get online access. The title of this piece, this is The Guardian, the left-wing newspaper across the pond. We're still finding dead neighbors in North Carolina. We need help. We need help. It's not that there's no FEMA representatives there, but where are the sirens? Where's the death tracker? People need help. People are suffering. How dare J.D. Vance write an op-ed in the Washington or Wall Street Journal? This is what they're furious about. This is what they can't stop talking about. Says Joe this morning, I can't believe the Wall Street Journal would allow this. It's got to be censored. It says here, besides hearing that Joe Biden did an aerial overpass of our region and the appearance of FEMA trucks in my gentrified neighborhood on Tuesday, I have seen little evidence of the robust, coordinated, multi-agency response for which I and many others had hoped. Where's the multi-agency response? And now we've got another hurricane to worry about? Perhaps that's in part because of the roads and whatever. Further on, it says, any food I have personally eaten, water I have drunk, or hope I have felt has come from my neighbors and community. Not from FEMA. not from a multi-agency effort. People are right. This is one of many accounts. And as I say, Mayorkas himself, he said the quiet part out loud. We don't have enough money for this hurricane season. It's like I said yesterday, it's the first time a government official has ever made that statement. He said it. The government's out of money. What was the deficit this year? $1.8 trillion. It's spending trillions, even trillions more than it has, than it takes in. But we can't spare a few billion for these people, these victims, the people suffering. It's the neighbors, overwhelmingly, who are offering a helping hand. What about the infrastructure? What about the communities, the bridges that have gone down? What about the entire cities that are gone? Are we going to build those back better? The truth is that we need immense federal emergency funding. Right now, Western North Carolina does not look at all how you would remember from your mountain biking getaway. There's a day-to-day struggle to survive, a fundamental lack of sustainable resources and services. We're not looking at weeks to recover. We're looking at months and years. All of this happening on the eve of an election. Some would say the most important election of our lifetimes, perhaps in American history. You listen to Elon Musk. If Trump loses this one, it's over. Democracy's over. We just got to register those migrants in the six swing states, and that's it. It's a one-party state. It's exactly what Democrats have dreamed about. The Daily Caller says FEMA in May 2023 launched a $12 million grant program designed to increase equity in disaster responses by making greater investments in communities with high concentrations of racial and sexual minorities. That's how we have to approach disaster relief. Make sure there's equity. Kamala said it herself. These people, they've said it themselves. They're proud of this. They're proud of getting illegals to vote. They're proud of no photo ID, nothing. In fact, we're going to go out of our way to make sure no one sees an ID when you go to vote. Now, if you check into a hotel, or if you want to fly on a plane, or if you want to buy liquor or cigarettes, any of those things, yes, definitely ID. You've got to have ID. But voting, we're talking about sustaining democracy. No voter ID. And as I say, they love it. They're proud of their policies. They're proud of their woke disaster recovery efforts and all the percentages that have got to align just right. How many minorities or those of different sexual preferences are living in the hills of North Carolina? Because according to FEMA's own guidelines, they're going to have to take a back seat to these others. Who comes up with this? This is from Just the News. In the midst of the last major budget crisis in Washington, Democrats diverted money and the legal authority to put the nation's disaster relief agency into the business of caring for the millions of illegal immigrants who crossed the border on the Biden-Harris administration's watch. And now both parties seem to be trying to obfuscate the truth. They're both to blame. They both spend like drunken sailors, Democrats and Republicans. And now we're seeing where that money goes. And now we're seeing what the priorities are. It's like Tom Cotton says, look, they always have plenty of money if it's for their pet projects, for sure. White House spokeswoman KJP took the lead in trying to suggest it was a conspiracy theory to suggest that FEMA was using its resources to aid illegal aliens. Republicans countered with surprise and shock that FEMA had routed $640 million in grants to nonprofits aiding immigrants, many of whom have crossed into the USA illegally. But leave those stats aside. Actually, Mika says that's misinformation. You know who actually diverted FEMA funds to migrants? Trump. Trump did it. Okay, got it. As the world burns, it says here, the truth is both parties signed off on a budget deal earlier this year that increased funding for the new mission authorized in 2023 for FEMA. Just last year. It's not like this is long ago legislation or spending packages determined by, you know, Trump or Obama or Bush. This is last year. It says here, which is now reeling from a double-barreled hurricane crisis that has led to frustration over alleged missteps by the agency as millions of stranded and needy Americans in the Southeast await help. And it's about to be millions more. Well, unless they've all evacuated. But even still, just the level of property damage alone, how are we going to fix Central Florida if it's underwater tomorrow or the next day? And what a time, by the way, for Kamala Harris. Hurricane Kamala, she's everywhere. She's on all the shows now. She was hiding in the basement for the first 70 days. And now she's on every podcast. She's on every, and they're all softballs, but even still. Circleback told us a while back that they were going to take a new strategy or a new approach. She was excited about it. She was excited to report on it. Yeah, now she's going to be visible. Now she's going to take the hard questions. Frank Luntz says she's the one taking the hard questions, but not Trump. 60 Minutes, by the way, was exposed because some of the clips we showed you yesterday, they started to circulate on social media. And so everyone's reminded again just how much misinformation 60 Minutes spews out, or at least in the case of 2020. They lie and they do it effortlessly. They do it. It's so easy for them. So she's going on the shows. She was on 60 Minutes. That was a disaster. And then she goes on The View. Again, the ladies on The View, they hate them some Donald Trump, every single one of them. Even the Republican, the token Republican, they hate Trump. They fantasize over Trump being eliminated. And then Kamala comes on to The View, and she basically, she only has one mission. What's her campaign? The new way forward. That's her slogan. So she's got to try to show that she's got to at least create a little bit of distance between her and Biden. Because you see, she doesn't want to be known for being with Biden for 4 years as the country goes up in flame. So she's just got to create some separation. Say that, well, I really wasn't too involved because I was vice president, but we do have some new policies. We do have a new way forward. In this montage, you'll see that little bit from The View. It's about halfway through as we've pulled together Hurricane Kamala, the media hurricane that suddenly is Kamala Harris. This is clip one.
Please welcome back the next president of the United States.
At the vibe election, everybody, all the vibes were all good, but elections I think are won on vibes, because one of the old saws is they just want somebody they can have a beer with. So would you like to have a beer with me so I can tell people what that's like? Okay, this was, now we asked ahead of time because I can't just be given a drink to the vice president of the United States without asking. You asked for Miller High Life.
If he wins, God forbid, would you feel safe in this country? Would you stay in this country?
Howard, I'm doing everything I can to make sure he does not win.
Polling shows that a lot of people, especially independent voters, really want this to be a change election.
Mm-hmm. Well, if anything, would you have done something differently than President Biden during the past 4 years?
There is not a thing that comes to mind in terms of, and I've been a part of most of the decisions that have had impact.
What do you make of that?
I'm surprised, frankly, that she doesn't have more to say about this, given that she and her campaign know that this is one of the main questions that voters have about her. And one of the main things she's been trying to establish as part of her candidacy is the idea that she would represent a break from the past 4 years. And to not be able to come up with something to say in that moment, she continues to not be particularly nimble on her feet in a lot of these interviews.
It is surprising that she didn't have an answer canned and ready to go for that question, which is kind of at the core of what voters are asking themselves. Who is really the candidate who's going to give them change here?
Uh-oh, Barack's not happy. After hiding Harris all fall, Democrats watched her numbers drop. It was time to change strategy. Obama ordered Kamala, you're doing a media blitz. But Harris couldn't handle the pressure. She couldn't even survive The View.
Not even The View. What did she say there? There's not a thing that comes to mind in terms of, and I've been a part of most of the decisions that have had impact. Yeah. I'm wedded again to Joe Biden. 20% inflation in the Biden Kamala Harris years? I wouldn't change a thing. I wouldn't change anything with Afghanistan. With the border, with no. So what is it? Is she tough on the border or is she not? Because judging by the last 4 years, her dreadful record. Look at what's being exposed. And then Howard Stern asks her, are you going to stay in the country? She doesn't even answer. Oh, of course I am, Howard. I'll be part of the opposition. But this is the United States of America. Delusional thinking. TDS. Trump derangement syndrome. They've all caught it, except for Jesse. But all the rest, well, even CNN. Even CNN says, I can't believe that's how she responded. I can't believe that's how she responded. And then she's out there right in the midst of this unbelievable hurricane season, this hurricane that's about to devastate Central Florida. And on the side, she's trying to act before reporters like she's very involved. I tried to call DeSantis. He wouldn't take my call. And then, as I say, her boss, or at least the fake one, her boss, Jesse had it right, by the way. Barack's not happy. He's ordered her to make the rounds. It's now Hurricane Kamala. And it's not going so well. But listen to the fake president yesterday as he pretty much undermines everything that she's out there saying about DeSantis. Clip 20.
The governor of Florida has been cooperative. He said he's gotten all that he needs. I talked to him again yesterday, and I said, no, you're doing a great job. It's all being done well. We thank you for it. And I literally gave my personal phone number to call.
I mean that sounds pretty good. That's fine. But you cannot imagine more levels of fakery that we're treated to every day. Here's the fake president. He's ousted by the fake vice president and then the dear leader. He's continuing on with this fake presidency. And then he's undermining that. It's just so much fakery and phoniness. America's under attack, isn't it? We've been promoting this book for so long. It's been around since 2013, over 10 years. And people see it now. I'll get to an American Thinker piece here in just a second. The author there is basically saying, I'm obviously still upset that they stole the election in 2020, but at the same time, I'm happy that all of this evil, this filth, has been exposed. It's been exposed in large part because of the stolen election. And that's why these imposters, they keep reverting back to Jan 6, stolen election, Jan 6, stolen election. I mean, here the content was about the hurricanes on Morning Joe this morning, and yet Jan 6 finds its way into that story. It's somehow it's related to hurricanes and disaster relief and FEMA. Got to throw in Jan 6. Throw in stolen election. How dare they let J.D. Vance pen an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal. Kamala, as I say, as she makes the rounds, you know, the more she talks, the more it helps Donald Trump. Listen to this one, clip two.
The American dream right now is really elusive for far too many people in terms of even aspiring to own a home. It's too expensive. We don't have enough housing. We have a housing shortage. So
the American dream is elusive. We played a similar clip like that a few days ago. The Trump ads, they keep writing themselves. All she has to do is talk. Listen to Maria Bartiromo as she talks about the economy and how much worse it is today than it was just 4 years ago. Clip 13.
Look at the last 1,400 days of the Biden-Harris administration. She has said that she would not change anything differently. And what does that mean? Every American has faced a 20.3% inflation tax just to put food on their table, clothes on their backs, and gasoline in their cars because of the Harris-Biden economic policies, where she was the tie-breaking vote that brought this incredible $10 trillion worth of spending. And what has she said repeatedly, Maria? On day one, she wants to repeal the Trump tax cuts. So what does that mean? That means a 35% corporate tax rate. That would be the fourth highest tax rate of any nation in the country, almost 10 points above that of communist China. These are the economic policies that would crush America globally. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's really disingenuous for her to talk about her efforts to rein in inflation when it's, in fact, her fault and Joe Biden's fault, spending $10 trillion in the last 4 years.
Inflation alone is like tacking on a 20% tax because every American feels it at the grocery market. Then you add to that the fact that these people always, always, always want to raise taxes. How do you defend this? Now that you're ordered to blitz the media, interview after interview, how do you defend this? Well, you just get out there and say, the American dream is elusive, but hey, I grew up middle class. Even The Hill admits that Democrats are panicking. It says their nerves are at an all-time high. 2 months ago, even a month ago, they were feeling bullish about Vice President Harris's prospects of defeating former President Trump. But now, with less than a month to go until Election Day, they're increasingly worried about a number of issues plaguing the Democrat nominee's campaign. Refers to the 60 Minutes interview and some other details. It's just not going well. It's not going well. The internal polls tell you the real story, and they know it. They know it. They know Donald Trump's riding all the momentum. Elon Musk sat down with Tucker the other day and spoke of just how important this coming election is for the future of democracy. You can skip ahead to 16.
I mean, my view is that if Trump doesn't win this election, it's the last election we're going to have. The Democrats, the Dem machine, has been importing so many people, bringing in so many illegals, flying in with this like CBP border app thing that nobody even knew about, like secret program. That's illegal, basically. It's illegal, but there's no action by DOJ to stop it from happening. They're transporting large numbers of illegals to swing states. If you look at the numbers, these are the numbers from the government website. So like from the Democrat administered government websites. Like, where do you get this data? From the government website that is run by Democrats. There are triple digit increases in illegals to all the swing states. And in some cases, it's like 700% over the last 3 years. Now, these swing state margins are, you know, sometimes 10, 20,000 votes. So what happens if you put, you know, hundreds of thousands of people into each swing state? And when somebody is granted asylum, they are fast tracked. They can get a green card, and then 5 years after the green card, they can get citizenship and they can fully legally vote. And when they do so, they vote overwhelmingly Democrat.
A lot of them are going to be voting this year illegally, but like he says, another 4 or 5 years, then they'll vote legally, and that's it, lights out. He understands. This is the world's wealthiest man, and he understands where the real threat to democracy is coming from. The man interviewing him, Tucker, he sees it. Obviously, Donald Trump sees it. Listen to them as they talk about voter ID. This is clip 17.
And a friend of mine who lives in Palo Alto was like, is this actually real? And he went to like vote in like some city council election. He tried to show them his ID, and they said, "We're not even allowed to look at your ID."
Have they extended the same?
Actually, what's going on right now? But by the way, they're proud of it. They're not hiding it.
But it's only voting. It's not buying a gun or buying liquor or buying a pack of cigarettes or flying on an airplane or renting a hotel room. It's only voting that it's illegal.
Oh, if you try to buy a gun, I mean, they're going to ID you 6 ways a Sunday. California's trying to make it basically legal to own a gun.
So everybody sees that in the case in California that he mentions. The one guy tried to pull out his ID, and the election official specifically said, "No, we can't. We can't look at your ID." Tucker went on to ask him more personally, "You know, why are you doing this and becoming so vocal and making yourself such a huge target?" Clip 18.
But why not join the easier side? I mean, you're creating problems for yourself by getting on stage with Trump. And I mean, you must have had friends who said that to you.
Sure. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. But people who care about you, like, why even get involved in this?
Well, I think we want to remain a democracy, and we don't want to become a one-party state.
Yes.
That's the reason. It's the exact opposite. The people call Trump a threat to democracy. But the people who are saying Trump's a threat to democracy are themselves the threat to democracy.
Yes.
One-party rule is not democracy. One-party where essentially the party elite pick a candidate, as happened with Kamala, is not democracy. Where did the people vote?
That's a man with some courage. How things have changed in miraculous ways just over the past 3-4 years. Listen to what Elon had to say about Donald Trump. This is 15.
And because I think it just inherently has a strong constitution.
So, you were just with him. He didn't seem like a man who'd been the subject of 2 assassination attempts.
No, he seemed of sound mind and body and strong backbone.
It's pretty amazing. Well, we make sure you get America Under Attack if you haven't secured your free copy already. There's no cost, no obligation. Just call our operators, the 800 number, 1-866-930-3024. Starts with the Dear Leader in the opening pages and then takes you right on through these last many years. This American Thinker piece on the election steal and all that has transpired since. I mean, the basic point that the guy makes is that if they hadn't completed the steal in 2020, Trump obviously would have remained in power. We'd be coming up, like General Flynn likes to point out, we'd be coming up to the end of Donald Trump's second term right now. As it is, he left peacefully. Yes, he did. And now look at the corruption, the scale of the corruption and the criminality. The scale of the dishonesty and the deceit of the regime media. The weaponization of all these government agencies. Think about if Trump was at the end of his second term right now, and so many of those same people, the ones he had for the first term, surrounded him right now, we wouldn't understand or see the scale of this attack from within. This guy writes, the 2020 theft saved this country. How's that for a title? As I say, everyone now sees. Everyone sees what we were pointing out in 2013 during the Obama years. Fundamentally transform the United States of America. The 2020 theft saved America. Trump just put together a coffee table book that goes by that title, Save America, or Saving America. I forget exactly the title, but he's got the fist pump on the cover. It says here, first, let me state the obvious. Trump won in 2020. The statistics are overwhelming. And he goes on and says, I mean, in all honesty, I'm still upset about it. The fact that it happened in America, the fact that so many people just were fine with overlooking it on the left and on the right. As I've said before, I'll never forget Laura Ingraham. I think it was 8-9 days after they stole it, where she came on the air. She's on Fox News. Listen, we've got to stop contesting this election and just move on. Next time, let's get more lawyers. What? And then we went through a couple years, basically, of Trump being censored. Don't show his campaign rallies. Don't give him a voice on social media. Even the right-wing outlets. They thought Morning Meltdown had it right. He's finished. He's a pariah. He's a weight that's just hanging on the party, dragging everyone down. They came out with that again. They recycled it during the midterm elections in 2022. Remember how giddy Scarborough and company were when they woke up and they didn't get quite as many red seats as they were hoping. And so Scarborough and company were there to tell you that Trump was finished, that everything he touches turns to ruin. It's a disaster. Now look where we are. We were saying it the day after they stole it. It's divine providence. It's kind of like the head tilt. God said, no, in this case, it needs to be stolen in order for the country to be saved, we would add temporarily. It says here, so at first glance, this looks like and felt like a significant loss, the steal, that is, a significant loss for the right and conservatism. Upon their taking office, and in this situation, it really was taking office, Biden and company immediately set out to undo basically everything Trump had done. If Trump's fingerprints were on it, it needed to be killed. Again, this looks like a loss. But now in doing this, look at how it's exposed Kamala and the fake president and the dear leader. Whatever Trump did, then we're going to do the opposite. That's TDS. He clamped down on the border. We're going to open it wide, wider than ever. And we'll redirect funds from FEMA over to migrants. And then we'll try to get these illegals registered so that they can vote Democrat, just like Elon said. It says, looking back, we will see this stolen election as a nadir, a profound inflection point in this country's and the world's politics. We have discovered corruption and institutional rot that permeate our government and society. And this time, the evidence is so overwhelming, it is impossible to ignore or write off as right-wing fever dreams. It's so overwhelming. I mean, you could scream all you wanted about the corrupt DOJ in 2019 and 20. But now look at the evidence. It's overwhelming. The blatant politicization of the DOJ, FBI, CIA, IRS, military, judiciary, etc., really almost every aspect of the federal government has been laid bare for all to see It says, for many of these folks, the concept of equal justice under the law is something they discarded long ago. Many states are as bad or worse. Top to bottom. This is Isaiah 1. Sickness. From top to bottom. It says, compare what you would have been, what would have been the second term for Trump 45 versus Trump the 47th president. If he had been acknowledged as the winner, his administration would have continued to be hamstrung by the various rhinos, uniparty members, and just those intent on sabotage who populated his administration from the VP on down. Yeah, from Pence on down. He's not running this time with Mike Pence. You may have noticed. His running mate, he's writing an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal saying these people are frauds. These people mismanage everything. These people lie to you. That's not a message Mike Pence delivers. It says here, Vance versus Pence? Not even a contest. It will be the same across his administration. Look at the new coalitions being formed this very moment. Minorities and working class are embracing Trump like never before. Those who are once enemies have joined hands because their eyes have been opened by the results of this stolen election. It is truly a glorious thing. I mean, look at the fact that Elon Musk sitting down with Tucker, getting together with Trump, supporting Trump, promoting Trump. He hated him just a couple years ago. Did not like the guy at all. 47 will be orders of magnitude more impactful and successful than second term 45 would have ever been. Here and across the globe. So, he concludes, thanks for the stolen election. Whether it's what goes around comes around, this administration and its stolen election have sealed their fate, and it's not a pretty one. Sometimes what seems to be a loss turns out to be a win. The guy writes at the very end, thank you, God. Thank you. Now, you think about the prophecy in Amos 7. The disappearance of Antiochus. I mean, you look at that stolen election, you look at the dear leader and his stranglehold on government and all these corrupt agencies. It's coming to an end, just as Amos 7 says. It's coming to an end. The political Antiochus' stranglehold on government here within the United States. It's in its last days. And that's what you see. With this frantic push to now unleash Hurricane Kamala all across the airwaves. They know it's not working. The left-wing journalists at the Hill, they know panic has set in. They know. They know. The handwriting is on the wall. They see it. But we don't want to get as giddy as this man does at the end of his column, because going back to Isaiah 1, I mean, it's a sickness that has set in. One of the interviews that Kamala did, by the way, this past week, it's with, I knew nothing about this lady's podcast or the content that she typically has on it, but it's basically a pornographic discussion talking about all kinds of perversions in the world of sex. And I guess what's kind of stunning to me from the news stack this morning is how wildly popular it is. I think this host gets paid something like $60 million from Spotify. $60 million to talk about perverted sex. And then in comes Kamala. Of course. It's perfect. You lift the lid off this corruption. It's like the hole in the wall in Ezekiel 8, as I've said before. God is showing us even greater abominations. And that's really what this guy's saying at the American Thinker. Listen to what Elon had to say in that sit-down with Tucker, clip 19.
You know, I think part of why Kamala's getting so much support is that if Trump wins, that Epstein client list is going to become public.
Yes.
And some of those billionaires behind Kamala are terrified of that outcome.
Yeah. Do you think Reid Hoffman's uncomfortable?
Yes.
Yeah.
And Gates.
And Gates.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I only ask that because you can sort of, you just look at them and you're like, that's a nervous person right there. I don't know. I mean, I assume you know them. Yeah.
Yes. Reid Hoffman was my vice president of business development at PayPal.
Yeah.
24 years ago.
Does he seem nervous to you?
Yeah, I mean, he's terrified of a Trump victory.
They're naming names. Billionaires terrified of a Trump victory. And he said there at the start, terrified that Trump will reveal the Epstein client list. We've had this other clip. Hopefully we have enough time to play it, but it's our favorite attorney, Tony Busby. He's representing victims of Sean Combs, you know, the P. Diddy guy. He's another Epstein. And there's a lot of people nervous about his client list being released as well. Listen to what Busby had to say last week, clip 23.
The day will come when we will name names other than Sean Combs, and there's a lot of names. It's a long list already. And of course, I already know who some of these individuals are, but because of the nature of this case, we're going to make sure that we're right before we do that. But the names that we're going to name, assuming that our investigators confirm and corroborate what we've been told, are names that will shock you. Anyone who participated in such in any way, anyone who encouraged or facilitated this conduct, anyone who was in the room and watched it happen, but made no effort to stop it, any venue or venue owner who was aware of what was going on, but failed to stop it, any individual or entity who knew about the conduct and benefited from it, but did nothing to report it or stop it, and any individual or entity who covered it up or helped cover it up. I would imagine, as we speak here, there are a myriad of people who are very nervous. You can't hide skeletons in the closet forever. I would expect there are many people out there right now who are desperately searching their memories as they delete their texts and data. Typically, the victim is lured into a situation where he or she is given a drink. Typically, that drink, reported by these victims, is apparently laced with something. Once that drink takes effect, the perpetrators perform all kinds of sexual acts on the victims, many times passing him or her around as other people watch and enjoy the show, and then leave the victim ashamed, confused, injured, and wondering what happened. When the victim reaches out, he or she is told not to say anything. Sometimes there are threats of physical violence or financial repercussions or bodily harm. I expect we'll start filing these cases against Sean Combs and other perpetrators within the next 30 days.
Here in the United States, I mean, we just traffic in so much filth. You see it in the podcasts. You see it in the entertainment industry. You see it in the swamp. You see it in D.C. Here's Elon Musk, the world's wealthiest man. And there's Busby, high-powered attorney, saying that it's time to name names. And some of these names are going to shock you. Isn't it interesting that this is beginning to come out right now, just 4 weeks, less than 4 weeks away from the possibility of Donald John Trump, returning to office? That's all we have time for on today's fast-moving show, the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.